the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line. Way back in.
There has been a sports explosion, you guys. I don't know how else to say it. We need to face it head on, and we're going to start with baseball. The winter meetings are wrapping up on Thursday. Bryce Harper may have made the loudest noise, and he wasn't even there. So let's start first. Bryce Harper in 2018 will be a free agent. Mm-hmm. He's asking for a reported $400 million. Will Leach, Sports on Earth's Will Leach, says that that's a deal. Gemma, I want to start with you. Trend or trash, Bryce Harper asking for $400 million.
I think we should trend it. It's always great to talk about Bryce Harper and his skills, which of which there are many. I feel like that number is getting a lot of conversation right now,
Yeah. But
that might not even be accurate. There's been a lot of speculation about whether he asked for that, like that come from
Scott
his,
Boris.
Boris said he did not have any conversations with anyone at the Nationals about that. So it like whoever reported that number, whoever let that information into the world may have just been trying to influence some kind of conversation about Bryce
typical
Harper's value or like, typical hot stove speculation.
But you're not mad about
However,
it.
However, no, I'm not mad about it because I do think it is worth talking about what Bryce Harper's free agency will be like because he will command a tremendous price, assuming that he kind of reverts to form off of, you know, not the strongest 2016. Do I think it's a steal? Not necessarily. Do I think it is appropriate and a reasonable amount of money? Like, I kind of do.
And without further ado, Ashley, trend or trash?
So I'm going to trend this. We've been waiting for his free agency since he was like 16 years old.
Yeah.
Swear to God.
That's true.
So we've been looking forward to like this massive contract that he's probably going to get if he turns out to be a star. He turned out to be a star. Mm-hmm. But is he the biggest star? No, not to me. So I don't think he is worth $400 million.
Okay.
Will, you really think he's worth $400 million?
Who do you think is worth $400 million? Is anyone worth
$400 million? I think Mike Trout's worth $1 billion. That would be pretty cool, actually. Let's be honest. No one's worth $1 billion.
Okay, in my opinion.
I think it's Mike Trout, though.
If anyone's
going to get that.
Yes, I think that, I mean, $400 million, there's a lot of things, right, because you can take it.
And what is his season this year going to be like?
He's also so young. Like, he's going to be so young when he hits free agency. And he's not even at his peak yet. So it's like if he continues to go down the path he's going, like, first of all, we can't think of money in the absolute terms where it's like he's getting paid more. Everyone gets paid more. Like, just as time goes on,
I know,
everyone's going to be getting paid more. That's just how it is. So saying, like, whether or not he's worth, like, if he gets paid $400 million, Mike Trout, when he hits free agency, he's also going to get an insane amount of money, you know?
Well, he doesn't have like, Boris.
Okay, so we're going to stay on the topic of Bryce because he deserves two topics. So he not only was making headlines for this supposed $400 million, but also the tweet that was heard around the world, right? After Adam Eaton was signed to the Nationals, the Nats sent Lucas Giolito and a couple other guys over to the White Sox.
Yeah.
He tweeted, wow, it got 3,000 retweets, 4,500 favorites. And it was obviously referring to the trade because his next tweet said, you know, welcome, EA, like, can't wait to have you, whatever. But trend or trash, literally publicly snubbing your front office and the decision that they made to try and have your team win the World Series.
He tweeted, wow, not screw you. Like, he tweeted, wow.
Wow, dot, dot, dot.
Yes, okay, but everything you choose to read into it after that is you choosing to read into it. It's not like he said anything explicitly negative. He said something that probably a lot of people were thinking about that trade, which was, wow.
I mean, he's not a teen, but he basically is a teen, and teens love doing stuff like that.
Okay, I'm going to break it.
A teen.
I want to trash it.
He's mentally a teen.
I think that when you are Bryce Harper and you are a face of a franchise and you're asking for a lot of money when your free agency is coming up, I think, and you represent a lot of brands and you have sponsorships.
No, I agree.
And people look up to you. I think you have to keep something like that in check. I think
when people look up to you, he tweeted, wow.
I know.
He did not tweet,
yeah,
like,
but it's obviously
an explicitly, like, an adult photo.
No.
He tweeted, wow.
No, but
that doesn't matter.
I just think he knew exactly what he was doing.
We all knew what he was doing.
If
your team says to you, like, oh, we're probably not going to keep you after your free agency, you can't do it. And then he's like,
Well, that's also reported, right?
Tweet his tweets. Like, I just don't.
Sure. We all want him to tweet his tweets because it's entertaining
for
us. Like, we're very excited to read his tweets. But we all know what he meant by it.
Yes.
He made it pretty obvious, and that's what we're talking about now. And I think, I mean, also, when has he ever been, like, the quiet, like, I'll just keep to myself
person? He actually doesn't tweet
literally
a lot of personal
making
things.
Baseball
no, no, no.
fun again.
I mean, like, just on the field, his inability to, like, be a polite person sometimes is, it happens. Like, when he's cursing at an umpire, which is absolutely ridiculous and unacceptable, he's never been someone that's going to be, like, I'm just going to let this one go. I'm going to, like, throw a little thing out there. You know, he's always been that person.
There's a
which
lot
is
of,
fine.
There's a lot of
it's
coals
fine.
In the fire.
Like,
and I think
he's a fun person to watch because yes. of it, even though I do not think you should be cursing out umpires for no reason. But, and this is me saying that. I mean, that says a lot, right? but I did enjoy that tweet because I was like, ooh,
well,
something's about to go down.
It obviously stirred a lot of pots. I think it was the headline for every leading sports site. Right, we're going to switch gears to football. The Los Angeles Rams.
Good one.
Yes, the Los Angeles Rams extended Jeff Fisher's contract 2 years. The Rams are 4-8 in the NFC West. They're 1-8 since October 9th. They've won one game since October 9th. And it's pitiful. I think that coaches get fired for less and for more. It's unbelievable. I don't know what he has on somebody, but he has something because no one in the earth would give someone a 2-year contract.
2 years is crazy.
After this,
I'm gonna trash the fact that they did that, but trend it because that's 2 more years of Jeff Fisher, so 2 more years of failed seasons for the Rams. That's great.
Okay.
But, no, I think it's – honestly, I think it is very funny. It is kind of like there must be a blackmail situation going on. But does it speak loudly to the fact that the coaching pool we have is not that great right now? Probably.
That's a great point.
Because, I mean, Niners are stuck with Chip Kelly for 100 years probably. We're still going to keep giving that guy money, I'm sure. Because there's no one really out there that we can – that any teams want to, like – invest in right
that's
now.
That's true. Gemma?
Can't think of anyone
else. Well, then maybe that's because I mean, like, I think this is a trash contract, but, you know, trend it because it's fun to speculate on.
Sure.
Right.
I think it's also really embarrassing that he sort of started blaming players for the quality of the play. It's like, all right, well, but you're the coach, though, and the captain is supposed to go down with the ship.
You don't usually
so
hear coaches
you need to get it together.
Say that.
Yeah. So I think that's sad and embarrassing for him. But maybe what we should trade is this idea that maybe there are people out there who deserve these jobs and who are not getting them because there's a lot of complacency. And I feel like to get an NFL coaching job, you already have had to have an NFL coaching job,
college job. Yeah.
Even if you're not like.
You've got to know somebody who knows somebody.
And it seems like maybe what should happen is there are probably people around these organizations who could and should step into those roles. And that's what we should hope for.
Yeah. And
I mean,
a lot
not
of times
in Rams because
it's
too late. It's time that contract is locked down.
It's locked down 2 years.
And I'm sure front office probably loves him because he does exactly what they say. And that's a lot. It's a big deal because if you have a coach that's going to win and all of a sudden doesn't agree with your head dudes, they're going to be like, you know what? Screw this guy. We'll find someone else.
Right.
And then you never find anyone else, 49ers. You never find anyone else. You never should have given up Harbaugh. What were you thinking?
I knew what this was really
about. I know. But I've been there. I've seen it. And this could be that exact thing. Maybe they want him to spend, have a couple more years with Goff. Maybe they would like the Fisher-Goff relationship.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I think it's stupid.
So the Los Angeles Rams have Jeff Fisher for 2 more years. So
good job.
Have fun with that. Yeah. Staying in football, Cam Newton benched by head coach Ron Rivera for not wearing a tie. He said his shirt, he had troubles with his shirt. He couldn't find one big enough. He couldn't borrow one. The tie didn't work. So he was benched for the first series. Backup quarterback Derek Anderson came in, throws an interception. Panthers literally were demolished by the Seahawks. I think it was 40-7 was the score, the final score of the game. Trend or trash, your team is already struggling, and then you take out the reigning MVP because he didn't have a tie.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to trash this all the way to the house. It is very silly to bench your MVP even for one series because, my God, you need every little piece of help you can get, especially they weren't just playing a little lowly team. They're playing the Seahawks. So that was very silly. I also like that Ron Rivera was like, okay, rules are rules, and I don't care who you are. Yeah. We're gonna apply them however we see fit.
Yeah.
I'm going to trash the fact that Cam couldn't find a shirt. You make how much money? You can't just go out and have someone buy it for you. Don't you have a shirt butler? Like, there has to be something that you could have done.
You will now.
But also, I love that he tried to get away with that because that is so Cam Newton to be like, let's see if I can pull this off. Nope, you cannot.
Yeah, I think this is trash, and I frequently say, and many people other than me, I did not originate this phrase, call it the no fun league.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's extra true. This is a stupid rule.
Oh, no, they're letting them do stuff on cleats for 1 week out of the year now.
Oh, one whole week.
One whole week.
Some teams.
Anyway. Yes.
Well, they got Titans and the Browns got to do it now.
Did also,
they?
I just think
they could do it the following
the tie week. Business. Oh, so it's nice. Like infantilizing and a stupid rule. And these are adults, not 12, not like 12-year-olds.
That was a good one. That's Gemma's word of the week.
Gemma's. Oh, yeah.
That was a good one.
Oh, thanks.
I like that one.
We should have done that a long time ago.
I know. So I'm gonna twofold. One, I want to trend it because I do think that rules apply to everybody, and I think that you have to set a standard and that you've got to follow through with it, right? Or people just think they can do what they want. But I'm also gonna trash it because I think that at this point in the season, he couldn't get a tie, and you felt it necessary to take him out for the series and cost you the game. I think that sets the tone.
I mean, it's
in
just
the
one, but still,
that's
like
a
it sets
really
the
foolish
momentum.
Power play. Yeah, yeah. I'm in charge of you.
It's kind of unnecessary.
Yeah,
but I get it.
Back to baseball, the collective bargaining agreement. Finally signed. Ooh. 5 more years of peace and glove.
Peace and glove.
Peace and glove.
Richard Justice.
Richard Justice. That wasn't
Justice.
Me.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. One,
keep making that face.
Yeah. One of the new stipulations is the All-Star game will not define home field advantage in the World Series.
Great.
That's a big deal. That is how many people and how long have we
floating.
Been talking about this?
I'm floating.
That's nice.
Yes. Yeah. So that will no longer determine that. That's a big deal. So obviously we're all going to trend that.
Yes.
I'm wondering, is there anything that you do want to see that would decide it?
That would decide home field advantage?
Yeah.
And no. I want it to be
the
regular
record.
The record. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the most deserving situation.
Yeah.
And we won't have a situation where the Cubs are winning in Cleveland.
Unless, like, it's a GM wrestling match. That could be fun.
That's brilliant. That should be for charity. I will give all my money.
I don't know if I actually want to see that.
I don't know if
that's hilarious.
I think that I need to burn my eyes.
That's just random enough for it to be perfect.
Maybe I want to see them, like, just have a skills competition, but, like, stupid skills. Like juggling and...
Just like a talent show.
Yeah, talent show. You know, talent show.
What's the dog? The dog show on Thanksgiving Day. Like maybe they do tricks. What's it, like
special skills show?
Yeah. I like the talent show idea very much.
Yeah,
and it's like a Mr. NFL. And but it's for the GMs.
It's like a pageant.
Yeah, a pageant.
This is really blooming into a beautiful thing.
Really beautiful.
GMs, please hear our cries.
Okay, we're gonna get back to this. We're gonna stick with more football. So the Jets coach Todd Bowles told the media that he was benching Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
He hadn't yet told Ryan Fitzpatrick that he was being benched for the rest of the season.
Whoops.
Oopsies. Yeah. Trend or trash. Does it really matter? Does he have to tell his starting QB that he's being benched before he tells the media?
You do. Absolutely. So I'm going to trash this story for his sake. Because he should have never done that. And it was just like a brain fart, I'm sure. Or you just have no control over the situation right now for Todd Bowles.
Okay.
There's just no control over this team. I don't know what's going on. But that oops shows a little bit of lack of leadership.
Yeah.
Which shows that you're
peeking into
you could potentially work for the Rams in 2 years.
Gemma?
Yeah, I trashed this as well. I just think that's a lack of basic manners.
Yeah.
You know?
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Yeah, exactly.
Todd Bowles. Okay, we're going to talk about another kind of quote-unquote benching. So Klay Thompson did something that no one's ever done, 60 points in 3 quarters, right? And then he
Miracle.
Was – Steve Kerr said, take a seat, my friend.
Rest up, bud.
Yep. So trend or trash, preserving someone for the future for what you hope to be a long playoff run or give them the chance to have this incredible historic occasion, kind of like we see a lot of times in baseball with no-hitters, perfect games, et cetera.
Sure. I'm going to trend Kerr's benching.
Okay.
Just because look at what happened last time the Warriors were chasing a cool thing. I'm just saying. We should focus on the team.
Wow.
Team only and winning. They're definitely going to win. You don't want to risk him like getting cold or hurting himself or anything like that. Just have him sit. Enjoy your 60 points and let the guys hang out. Let your B team roll out there and just kill it because they're very good too. You need the bench out there as much as possible. So that's the right thing to do.
Gemma?
I actually agree, you know, for once with you.
Thank you.
Mostly because it's like, yes, historic achievements are nice, but when there's still a lot that your team can accomplish as a team, you want everyone to be firing on all cylinders. It's like I think about, I don't even remember what this game this was, but it was like a Euro Cup soccer game forever ago, and it was Greece, and Greece was losing by a lot, but they still, the like one of the players who was very old, was the last game, like they let him have this penalty kick. And it's like, yeah, you know what? Do that, because it doesn't matter. We don't, there's no future after this. So it's going to be nice for you to get this goal, and that's going to add to your career total, and that'll be really high for a Greek player.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, like, it costs us nothing to let you do this.
Right. Yeah.
But if it's going to cost something,
that
then, calculus is in favor of the team.
Yeah.
It's tough because you don't get to see these spectacles all the time with people who deserve it, right? In baseball, I feel like it's really random when you watch someone throw a no-hitter or a perfect game. You're like, wait, Ross Stripling? Wait, Brett Anderson? Wait, what's happening here? I don't understand what's going on. And so you wanna give them that chance. And as a fan, you really want to see it. You're like, oh, man, I could have seen something so amazing that no one else could be here in person to see. But at the same time, you have to understand the coach is like, hey, we have bigger and better dreams to achieve here, not just some dinky little stat that, you know what, no one may remember in a really long time.
Yeah. I mean, and
it's still an incredible achievement.
Achievements are great. Yes, it's wonderful. And basketball is different. Like, baseball is very unique to where it's like a one-on-one team sport, you know? So you have more of an opportunity to be like, this is...
Do something so special.
Do this because your individual victory here will benefit the team.
Right.
You know what I mean? And while Clay's individual, like, victory absolutely did benefit the team, he already benefited the team, like, 30 minutes ago.
Right. So, he also doesn't go get team. 5 days of rest after.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
All right.
Team.
Good team. All right. So, you know, we can't go any further. College football has taken over everywhere because it is officially bowl season. And we're going to bring in bowl time. We're going bowling. Sports on Earth's college football columnist, Matt Brown, who has joined us throughout the season with great insight, incredible writing, and we're just really happy to have you back, Matt.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Of course. So there's a lot of places we could start. And so personally, I think for our producer Rena's sake, we're going to start with Penn State. And, you know, there's obviously controversy. They won the Big Ten championship. The committee didn't seem to think that their schedule, their strength of schedule was stronger than Washington's. So they got, quote unquote, a snub, right? But in your opinion, did the committee get it right?
I think this is the type of year where there was just no, like, 100% perfect answer. It depends how you looked at it. And, you know, the committee's charge is to look for the best four teams over the course of the season, not necessarily conference champions. And there's been confusion, and it's the committee's fault, confusion over what the criteria are. And an argument for Penn State can certainly be made. I mean, 11-2, nine straight wins. They beat Ohio State in October. They came from behind to beat Wisconsin the Big Ten title game. That's two top 10 wins, champions of a conference that has four top 10 teams. But, you know, they lost to Pitt in September, and they lost by 39 to Michigan, and those games count. The committee doesn't really look at when you lost. And it's, you know, it's not a matter of who's playing the best at the end of the season. It's the whole course of the season. So, you know, Ohio State's resume was stronger from start to finish in many respects, with a win at Oklahoma, with a win over Michigan. And, you know, Washington's schedule definitely was a knock on it. But, you know, they've been dominant all year, and they lost to USC, who's going to the Rose Bowl as well, and three wins over top 25 teams. And they've been dominant and complete. So I think Penn State had a legitimate argument. But I think the committee probably picked the answer that is most correct. But, not, you know, there's no answer that you could give that wouldn't have some kind of backlash. The only thing that was certain was that Alabama was going to be in. Everything else, there's something you can argue against.
I feel like that might always be certain. And just to follow up, when this season started, was Penn State on your radar when the season started?
No. I mean, they're in the same division as Michigan, Ohio State, and Michigan State, who won, you know, the Big Ten twice in the past 3 years. Nobody really expected Michigan State to fall off a cliff like it did to 3-9. But then, you know, there's still – if you would have said before the season that Penn State would win the conference when Ohio State and Michigan are both ranked in the top six, it would sound crazy. It would sound even crazier when they started 2-2, they got blown out by Michigan, and then October 1st they're playing Minnesota at home. They're losing 13-3 at halftime, and it looks like the season's going to be a disaster. And they came from behind that game, kind of set a trend, and they've just – you know, they got healthier on defense, and their offense has been one of the most improved units in the country. Nobody would have seen this coming even, you know, 7 weeks ago. So it's just really a remarkable turnaround. And so I think you know, there's some disappointment about Penn State not going to the playoff. But I think most Penn State fans are just completely thrilled regardless, you know, to go to the Rose Bowl in a season that looked like they might go 6-6 instead they're going to Pasadena, won the Big Ten. And they only have four senior starters right now, so there's going to be high hopes for next year, too.
Rena is excited about that. We can guarantee you she's dancing outside the studio right now.
Yeah, the Penn State people I know are very pumped about the Rose Bowl. So that's great. Congratulations, Rena, and everyone else that went to Penn State. So, Matt, so do you think we would be better off with eight teams? I mean, I think that would be fun, but what would we have to do for that? What is your opinion on that instead of the four teams?
Yeah, I wrote an article last week kind of detailing how I would do that. And I am a fan of eight teams. I think there would be some problems with it. And you know, in some years, four might be better than eight. In some years, six might be better. But this year, I think, would have lent itself well to an 18 playoff.
Sure.
If you include, you know, my system I'd favor would be, you know, you give an automatic bid to the five champions of the major conferences. And this year, that would be Clemson, Alabama, Washington, Penn State, and Oklahoma. And you give another spot to the best champion of the group of five teams, which would be Western Michigan this year, who's 13-0. And then that would leave two at-large bids, and you could give two spots to Ohio State and Michigan, who a lot of people think are top five teams and probably are. So I think the playoff would work really well in that respect if it was eight teams. And I would play the first-round games at minimum on campuses. So I think you'd have some really fun matchups in good stadiums on campus. There's talk that, hey, maybe eight teams would devalue the regular season a little bit. I think there would be a little bit of that problem, but I think eight is probably the fairest way, especially how we saw this year play out.
So to shift gears a little bit, the Heisman Trophy will be announced on Saturday. There are many nominees. There have been a lot of speculation. Who do you think is going to take it home?
It's going to be Lamar Jackson. They're
locked and loaded right off the bat.
Louisville lost to Houston and Kentucky the last two games, and that kind of opened the door. But you know, I wrote before that Houston game that, you know, it was kind of his to lose. He had built such a commanding lead, and it wasn't just because Jackson had put up such ridiculous numbers. It's because there was no consensus on who the other candidates were, and that was still the case. I mean, when the finalists were announced on Monday, nobody really knew who else was going to be there. Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield had made enough of the case that we thought they would be there, but there just hasn't been a clear contender. I mean, before that Houston game, Lamar Jackson just had these overwhelming odds, and then, you know, sportsbooks ended up taking down the odds because he was such an overwhelming favorite. And, you know, so they lost a couple games late, and they didn't really win many big games beyond beating Florida State big, but, you know, Lamar Jackson's thrown for 3,390 yards. He's rushed for 1,538 yards. He has 51 total touchdowns. If you look at just his rushing numbers, that would be good enough to be an All-American running back. But then he's thrown 3,000 yards on top of that. So it's been an absurd season, and Baker Mayfield's been great. He might set the NCAA single-season passer rating record. Deshaun Watson's been great. And I think the other candidates, D.D. Westbrook and Jabril Peppers, have had great seasons too, the two other finalists. But nobody's really done enough to close the gap on Jackson despite those last two losses.
In the last few years, would you compare him to anybody? Would you say that he is in a class all of his own? Where does he kind of rank among the latest guys who have earned this trophy?
His season is most similar to Johnny Manziel. They are the only two players who have had over 3,000 yards passing and over 1,000 yards rushing in their first 12 games, according to Sports Reference. That kind of rare statistical character. And then some similarities, too, in that, you know, Jackson didn't have that big win that Manziel had in November when they beat Alabama on the road, and that kind of vaulted him to the top. Jackson's been at the top since they blew out Florida State in mid-September. But, you know, it's the same kind of numbers, same kind of awe-inspiring performance where he's just given so many headaches to defenses, so dominant with his legs, but also a really, really good passer. And, you know, just like Manziel, wasn't on a team that won its conference championship, but still a good top 15 team. So in terms of statistically, that kind of context, I think that's definitely the most similar case that we've seen. And Manziel, you know, wasn't a runaway race in 2012. He beat Manti Te'o and Colin Klein, but he was pretty much the overwhelming favorite by the end of the race. And I think Jackson's in the same position.
Just real quick, what bowl games should we be paying attention to? Because we have our various playoff forces. There are many. But so
the Tax Slayer Bowl.
Yeah.
Tax Slayer.
What other weird ones? We have these listed out here.
Potato.
The Boca Raton, the Poinsettia, the Potato.
My personal favorite, Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl.
Dollar General.
But there are just so many. And we have our own particular college football horses that we all like to ride. But what bowl game should we, you know, distract ourselves with if we're sad about the University of Michigan like I am?
Yeah, I mean, I love them all. I have an unhealthy obsession with bowl games, and I will probably watch, like, every one of them if I can. But, you know, there's a lot of good matchups. Yeah, there's some terrible ones. I said Maryland versus Boston College might be the most mediocre bowl matchup ever. Neither team has beat an FCS team with a winning record. They're both 6-6. They're playing in Detroit. But I'll probably watch that too. But there are some good ones, you know. Obviously, the Sugar Bowl and the Peach Bowl are the main – or sorry, the Peach Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl are the main ones to watch.
Sure.
Alabama, Washington in the playoffs, Clemson, Ohio State in the playoffs. But, you know, Penn State USC is going to be a fantastic Rose Bowl. Neither team has lost since September. If you would have said that would be a bowl matchup, you know, back in September, we would have thought it would have been some obscure bowl that we're talking about here. But instead, it's the Rose Bowl. You know, USC's won 8 in a row. Penn State's won 9 in a row. It should be a really, really good game. LSU versus Louisville in the Citrus Bowl. You know, Leonard Fournette hopefully will play. We'll see. He already declared for the draft. He's been banged up. But, you know, even if he doesn't play, you have Lamar Jackson, the probable Heisman winner, against LSU, who's been disappointing this year, but still has one of the best defenses in the country. So that should be a fun one in Orlando on New Year's Eve. You know, Michigan, Florida State in the Orange Bowl is excellent. You know, I kind of hope to see Lamar Jackson in that game in Louisville, but Florida State got to beat instead. But, you know, Michigan's defense is the best defense not named Alabama. Dalvin Cook probably should have been a Heisman finalist for Florida State at running back. So that's a really, you know, it's a consolation game for the playoff, but it should be a really, really good matchup. So, you know, lots of games to watch, even the first Saturday of the bowl season, next Saturday, December 17th, Houston versus San Diego State, a matchup of two really good teams that aren't in major conferences. Donnell Pumphrey, the San Diego State running back, has a chance to break the FBS career rushing yards record set by Ron Dane back in 1999. So, you know, even a semi-obscure bowl like that has storylines. So there's a lot of fun matchups to talk about for sure.
Matt, I want to steal a line from the Cut 4 podcast because it's one of my favorite things that they do, and they sum up their podcast in a tweet. So I'd like you to sum up your I guess, college football experience and the college football season in a tweet, if you can, please. I'm putting you on the spot here, I know.
Oh, wow. Sum up the season in a tweet. Despite all the controversy, the selection committee got it right, and we shouldn't complain.
Oh,
hey,
I like that.
It.
Strong take.
Yeah, nice. That's nice.
Awesome, Matt.
Pin that tweet.
We'll be retweeting that all day long. You have been awesome to talk with all season. I know we are so appreciative, and I know there'll be a ton of news to talk about once the season wraps up. We have a while for that. We have a lot more to go, a lot of great bowls, as you mentioned. So we'll look forward to all of your columns on Sports on Earth, and we appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me. Thanks.
Matt Brown, a serious rock star. He has been keeping us informed all season long, putting up with our very bad jokes and our, just helping us stay informed. We're very grateful for him, and he does great work on Sports on Earth. So we're going to head back to what's been going on during the hot stove season. Winter meetings wrapped up on Thursday. And there's a couple of things we didn't get to talk about during Trend or Trash. So one, Kenley Jansen reportedly – maybe the Marlins courting him, Don Mattingly, because he's comfortable. He wants to be comfortable where he's at, and he thinks, you know, maybe it's not about the money, maybe it's not about the place, although Miami isn't a bad place to go to, but he wants to be comfortable.
Sure.
So what do we think about that? Maybe he doesn't get the money. Maybe his team sucks for 10 years, but he wants to be comfortable. What do we make of that?
I will also be comfortable with $80 million. I would definitely be comfortable with that. No, I mean, I wanted him to stay in the NL West because I wanted him to be on the Giants. now that he's not going to, it's fine. I think that for him, it's a good move. I don't know. I really don't know because
it's
you still
bizarre.
Have Stanton.
You never really
you still
hear
have
that.
People. You have pieces to build around.
Sure.
They have young talent.
Yeah.
So this might be a really, really exciting
like veteran move
team. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Because now you have a veteran presence in the pen. You have a veteran presence on the
mound,
field,
right?
And on the mound, and they will they might do really, really well. This might be a great move for them.
Okay.
And I won't have to face Kenley as much as the Giants.
Yes, Ashley Chavez batting second.
I would
watch
that.
Can't hit that cutter, man. You cannot hit that cutter.
Yeah, I don't think that's I don't think that's a bad motivation, honestly, to just say I want to work with people I already know I work well with. Miami's great. And it's not crazy to think that this team could contend in the near future. I mean, it's not a prediction I would be comfortable making, but it's also...
You wouldn't put your money down.
No, it's also not...
You wouldn't bet your hair.
Definitely not. It's also not so far out of human possibility and reach to say it's like just a stupid idea to sign a contract there, you know?
I'm torn. Yeah. I'm torn because I understand that uprooting your family, being uncertain about how long you'll be there is a really... it's a thing. It's a thing that happens, obviously, to every baseball player, and it's something that will never stop, right?
Yeah.
Forever in the life of baseball. But I also think if I'm a baseball player, I want to face the best competition, and I want to be surrounded by teammates who have that fiery passion, and you know, Christian Yelich and Giancarlo Stanton and the whole gang, AJ Ellis, like those guys do. I just wonder if like he could be comfortable and still be around people who are competing at the same level as him. And I'm not definitely not bashing the Marlins. And I do think in a few years they will be up there. I worry that the Braves will be contending before the Marlins will, which
knows?
I think is a little backwards, but they've also made a lot of great moves. You know,
they signed the first 1,000-year-old starting rotation.
Incredible. Truly incredible.
Okay, moving on. Chris Sale, the Chris Sale trade. Not sure if many people thought he was tradable. He cuts up jerseys, but he's a young ace, and he's headed to Boston. Rick Porcello, David Price, Chris Sale. See you later.
They have to pick one.
Look, you can say see you later. Dave Dombrowski tried that with the Tigers, all right? Cy Young's just falling out of the clubhouse. And what did that get us? Not a World Series ring, I'll tell you that.
Someone's salty.
Yeah, that's how I live my life, under the sea full of salt.
But what do you think about Chris Sale going to the Red Sox?
I think this trade was really good, though, for both teams.
Absolutely, for both. Yeah.
So the Red Sox got Michael Kopech and Yoan Moncada and a couple other guys. Obviously,
The White Sox got them.
That's a big deal. Yoan Moncada, like, who isn't talking about him? But Jim Callis, MLBPipeline.com's Jim Callis was like, he's not ready yet. So, like, all this buzz around him is great, but he's not even ready yet. So you don't really know what you're getting when you get these prospects.
Well, sure. But it's also, like, this is what you have them for, is to trade for – because if you want to make a push, this is why you have – and this is a guy who probably wouldn't have even been able to come up with the Red Sox for a while because who is he going to replace? Like,
Absolutely. Great point.
The defense there is already this, like, gold glove caliber, you know.
Stupid amazing.
So if they can trade him in for this amazing pitching, they absolutely should do that.
The White Sox need to – the White Sox are thinking about the future – Red Sox are thinking about the present. This is the most equal transaction I think I've ever seen in my life. It's perfect for both. The only problem I have with the White Sox right now is that they're literally doing a crazy fire sale.
You need
to pick one person to build around.
Yeah.
And it can't be Moncada. Like, you can't build around a kid
Someone
in AAA.
You know what they're,
what they're and you have no idea what they're going to be like.
But maybe the White Sox, I mean, the Royals had an off year. The Tigers had an off year. So Indians, obviously, I think will contend next year. So the AL Central, you know, maybe they'll surprise people with these moves. I don't know. Obviously, Moncada will not be contributing right away.
For a little bit.
Yeah.
I hope they don't rush him.
Biggest surprises this past winter meetings week? I mean, there were a lot. Maybe something that we haven't touched on, anything? Melanson to the Giants. Cubs get Wade Davis.
Ian Desmond is going to play first base in Colorado.
Give that guy a chance at a position for longer than 3 seconds.
I'm stunned by this. I just don't understand it. I like Ian Desmond.
Yeah.
He was like, he really did learn a
likable
position.
Yeah.
And now they're like, let's put him in first base in Coors Field, which is like, fine. Okay.
Sure.
But why? Like,
they're scared of those yips happening.
I can't even make up.
First,
I truly just cannot make up a reason for this. Like, I just don't understand it at all.
I would say that was probably top three biggest surprises.
That was a huge surprise. I think really anything Nationals do at this point is going to be surprising for everyone.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. Everything they've been doing is kind of like, why?
We're shaking our head.
Yeah.
Like, because you picked
up. I like Adam Eaton, don't get me wrong. Like,
great, likable player.
Yeah.
You picked him up because of his war, right? Because his wins above replacement. I mean, Well, what about like everything else? Like, yeah, we're always so quick to be like, his war, his numbers, is this, is that. But yeah, like, what about everything else that he's doing?
I think he had a pretty good 2016. It was just he not very MVP noticeable votes. Because yeah, he played for a team that was just watching.
Beginning of the season.
If you play really well, they had so much fun.
They're yeah, really good beginning of the season.
But if you like, if you're Freddie Freeman, who also had a good 2016, it's like, Your individual talent really makes no impact, so people aren't paying attention.
Paul Goldschmidt for thousands of years. Yeah.
So I don't think, poor Paul. Yeah. I don't think it's crazy that the Nets were after Adam Eaton. I do think, like, clearly, as we discussed earlier, we don't really know what they think of Giolito now, if they were willing to make this kind of
thing. Someone was joking, did they think that Chris Sale was part of the package? Like,
I think they've been confused this whole time. McCutchen, too. The fact that no one will take him.
Well, here's the thing now is that Huntington is saying that they never intended to trade him.
Oh, yeah,
he said today
like
that the plan was always to keep Kutch with the Pirates, which I don't know about that.
Why?
But that is what he's saying now.
Gemma, you know what I have to say about that? Wow.
I interpret that
in a lot of ways, Danny. You could just be saying like, wow, I'm going to think about that for a while. Or
you
I'm raising my left eyebrow and glaring at you. It could
be so many things. Okay, so we can't wrap up the end of this winter meetings conversation on talking about Claire Smith, the first female and fourth African-American winner in the 55-year history of the award for contributions to baseball writing. We're doing spirit fingers now.
Sign language applause.
She will be inducted into the hall this July, and her name will be inscribed on the walls forever.
Awesome.
And it's what I think has been really cool is seeing all the women come out and be like, thank you for paving the way. Thank you for doing this for us. And, you know, even men, and watching like men be like, you earned this. Like, you absolutely should be here. And you worked your ass off. So, like, thank you for doing that. And I think that's been really cool to see.
Yeah. Definitely. So no, this is great.
Claire Smith, thank
Congratulations,
you.
Congratulations, Claire.
Congrats, Claire.
Go, Claire, go.
Come please be on our podcast.
That'd be great.
We'd love you. Anything else that we haven't talked about that needs to be talked about? Anything going on in life? I have jingle bell earrings.
You do.
I would like to wish Toronto FC good luck in the upcoming MLS Cup.
Okay. Any stories you're working on?
I mean, we're putting together a game, sort of, and I've been spending a lot of my time making, but it's can you guess the pitcher from their windup?
Ooh.
And it's very exhausting to work on, but it's going to be really fun and tricky.
I'm very excited.
So I think you should check it out.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
All pitchers in freeze frame look like giant birds. Like, if you just catch them at one spot in the windup, they just look like giant birds, and it's very creepy.
That's great. Nightmares of giant birds.
Housekeeping item, you can find the podcast on sportsonearth.com. On the right-hand side, you can see our little blurb, and it's there, and you can listen to all the episodes, and you can watch the videos on sportsonearth.com, and you can read all of Gemma's great work at cut4.com, and you can find Ashley everywhere, especially on Twitter.
I'm on Twitter.
Ash, what's your handle these days?
Right now, it's Snasty Chavez. But really, it's Smashly Chavez.
Right.
But I change my first name all the time.
Okay.
That one's for Hills.
Aww.
Well, we had a really busy week. I would also like to give a shout out to the fourth floor, who cut 550 pieces of content in 3 days. We're going to come back next week and have a couple more things to chat about. And we'll catch you next time.
Now the 2-2. Well hit down the left field line. Way back and gone!